Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making wonderful, exciting space saga rock music with his mouth is Ken Nabsok.
Little space saga rock indeed. Tried to do a little detective noir, failed on that, but I'll take the opera.
I just really, really liked that. It was clearly some just great, sweet drums, and then somehow the drums had like a guitar whammy bar attached to them.
Yeah, yeah. It's an electric light orchestra indeed.
A nice bending of the notes. Bending of the notes is maybe a good way to describe this arc that we're going to discuss. We love talking Clone Wars, and we discuss each episode or arc. This week, we are talking about the 4-episode arc that we're calling Deception of Kenobi. The episodes in this arc include Season 4, Episode 15, Deception, written by Brent Friedman and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Season 4, Episode 16, Friends and Enemies, again written by Brent Friedman and directed by Bosco Nagg. Season 4, Episode 15, The Box, written by Brent Friedman and directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Season 4, Episode 15, Crisis on Naboo, written by Brent Friedman and directed by Danny Keller. Ken, you often point out music connections. Mm-hmm. And just reading these Clone Wars titles, I kind of feel like this is a list of songs from an EP, right?
It really does sound like that, especially like The Box sounds like some kind of 1960s garage rock sound, like you're stuck in the box. It's all little prog rock with Crisis on Naboo. Good stuff.
Yeah, Friends and Enemies, Sith and Lovers. Yeah, just it all sounds like great songs. Crisis on Naboo, that's like an epic storytelling song for sure, right? Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
There it is. Legend lives on from the Naboo hills on down.
Excellent. Well, thank you, listeners, for indulging us in that musical diversion. We're going to get back into the arc. Here is the summary of this rather complex arc. It is a scheme of many faces. Dooku hires bounty hunter and criminal mastermind Morallo Evol to craft a complex plot to kidnap Chancellor Palpatine, thus pressuring the Republic to free Separatist prisoners. But perhaps unknown to Dooku, the whole plot seems to be a plan by Darth Sidious to test if Anakin Skywalker is ready to fall and become his apprentice. We will discuss that more. Rumors of the kidnapping plot reach the Jedi Council. Obi-Wan Kenobi is assigned to get information by faking his own death. Kenobi makes the controversial decision to keep Anakin out of the loop, believing Anakin's shock and grief is needed to make the ruse believable. After allowing himself to be shot and using painful face and voice-changing technology, Obi-Wan masquerades as the bounty hunter Rako, or Reiko, Hardeen. He trades on his reputation as the Jedi who killed Kenobi to ingratiate himself with the captive Morallo Evol. Kenobi discovers Evol has hired the deadly blaster slinger Cad Bane to burst him out of Republic lockup. After a brief prison fight with Boba Fett and Bosk, and the sad loss of Clone Guard lives, Kenobi escapes with Bane and Evol. Together, they venture to Nal Hutta to acquire weapons and a ship. Kenobi and Bane continually screw one another over as they vie for Morallo Evol's credits and confidence. News of Reiko Hardeen's escape and Kenobi's alleged killer reaches Anakin and Ahsoka. Palpatine encourages Anakin to follow his emotions, so he races to Nal Hutta and attacks the hunters. In a fit of irony, Anakin almost kills Obi-Wan to get justice for the murder of Obi-Wan, but the disguised Kenobi manages to pin Anakin, whispering to let him go and knocking Anakin out. Evol and his crew arrive on Sereno to meet with the scheme's true mastermind, Count Dooku. Bane and Kenobi, along with the rest of the galaxy's top bounty hunters, which, in a sick burn, does not include Bosk or Dengar, fight through the box. This is a large escape room of death designed by Morallo Evol to simulate the challenges of the kidnapping plot. As Hardeen, Kenobi risks exposure to save others in the box. Ultimately, he challenges Morallo Evol and savagely beats him down. Dooku demotes Morallo and places Bane in charge of the mission. Meanwhile, Yoda breaks and tells Anakin the truth. The Jedi, Kenobi, and the Hunters all converge on Naboo as they celebrate the Festival of Light, a celebration of Naboo's entry into the Republic some 800 years ago. A complex exchange of fake holographic identities, hidden conflicts, and Jedi heroics leads Kenobi and Mace Windu to save the Chancellor and arrest Evol and Bane. Unfortunately, Dooku has apparently fled. Anakin confronts Obi-Wan, furious at being lied to, but the deceptions are not over yet. As Anakin bonds more with Palpatine, Dooku lies in wait. The Count and Anakin duel viciously. Palpatine smiles as he witnesses Anakin's fury and how close he comes to killing Dooku. But Obi-Wan has realized he was manipulated. He arrives in time to save Anakin and free the Chancellor. Palpatine coos. One shudders to think where the galaxy would be without the Jedi. And for now, it is all over but the shuddering. So that is the review of what I think is going on in these four episodes. Let's get into what you think, Ken.
No, that's a great job. Especially when you talk about Bosk and Boba Fett, it really becomes like this all-star game of players we know. And these, I feel like Boba Fett and Bosk are in their own story and they're just passing through.
It really is. This feels like some Rashomon kind of story where we're going to see Bosk and Boba Fett's part of this adventure in prison at some point.
Yeah, 22 stories of Clone Wars era prisons. Yes, it's going good.
Yeah, so I made a bold proclamation of opinion at the beginning of the summary, but I want to run it by you. What do you feel like is the ultimate goal of this plan? Because we have some episodes of the Clone Wars where we really see Sidious and Dooku as Darth Tyrannus working together, and exactly what their goal is sometimes explicit. In this one, we have what Dooku says to the assembled bounty hunters, that they want to leverage a kidnapped Chancellor in order to free Separatist prisoners. But then at the end, we really do have what seems to be like Palpatine going, this is a great dry run.
Yeah.
To see if Anakin's ready to, if he's pissed off enough to break from the Jedi, and if he's skilled enough to take down Dooku.
I'm right there with you. Dry run, run and plays and practice to see what works. And if it works, bonus, right? If he's kidnapped and it all comes together, my obsession with Palpatine's plans always hinges around this idea of just like, you know, how much does he know? How much does he anticipate? And how much is he like, well, that's a fun little wrinkle that just popped in. I didn't expect Kenobi to change his face. Great. And I just think he works all of it to his advantage. And everything about him, the way he's just needling him. I don't think he expects Anakin to break, but man, it'd be great if he does. And dry run is a great way to look at this.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Palpatine absolutely does know that the Jedi are breaking, right? That they are starting to cross lines that they probably wouldn't before. Mm-hmm. And if he, you know, I think to the Jedi, he knows that they aren't really seeing him as they are seeing him as an individual, but they have such respect for the office. They have such a respect for the Chancellor as a symbol of the Republic, as a symbol of the thing that they will do anything to protect. It feels like he knows, like, hey, if I keep putting myself in mortal danger, they're going to keep crossing their own lines in their desperation to preserve, you know, me, to preserve the Republic via me as a symbol of it. So that's great. Just let them get into chaos. And then Anakin really gets pulled into it. And he's like, this is great.
Yeah.
Oh, push that button, push this button, push that button. This is perfect. And by the end, it really feels like the, you know, the last couple steps are just like, yeah, no, let me. I think this analogy keeps coming to me because it is the holiday season and many people do make turkeys. I feel like he is checking the meat thermometer in Anakin to see if his Sith turkey is done.
Anakin, you never tasted so good, my friend. Yeah.
So juicy.
There's so many parts in this, and it's animated, of course, as we know, but you could just see Palpatine's smile as portrayed by Ian McDiarmid, even on the animation here. It's just such, I love those moments where he's just kind of like.
It's so good. And there's some lines that are very, very non-subtle, but it's, if you know what the audience knows, which we do because we're the audience, but it's really, really just delicious, evilly delicious.
Yes.
All right. So I wanted to make sure that I was not foisting an interpretation on you that you did not agree with. And maybe some other listeners have a different interpretation since it's not explicit in the episode, but that's what we're running with.
No, I'm there with you.
Well, then let's dive into our overall reaction about the arc itself. Do you love this one? Like it? Struggle? Was it different this viewing than other viewings? Where are you at?
Different than the other viewings, but it was always in a relatively good spot. I always kind of refer to this as the Jedi gone done messed up arc. which is not always fair to the Jedi. We're here for the justice for the Jedi, but we can talk about that and context and the intentions and how that. You might find yourself in a position where you're going to take a step forward, even with some risks and, you know, opens up a lot of things. But looking back, I've always loved this arc, always been, you know, down for what's in the episodes. But I think back then, meaning when the episodes aired, the transformation of Kenobi, even the weird kind of the costumes, the disguises later on that are digital, but why do they keep cracking? I know we need to see who. I will admit I got hung up on that in the past. So this was one of those arcs I like what's there, but I don't need to watch it over and over. None of that matters to me now. It's so funny to go back. And not for any grand reason. I know I talk about growing as a Star Wars fan and we all want to do that. I just look back and go, yeah, it's space disguises. What do you want? Like, what do you want? And yes. There's so many wonderful things in this arc I'm concentrating on those.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I think I was mildly distracted by the technology. We'll talk about that. But I think I was even more, as I've mentioned a couple times here in season four, my first viewing, I was enjoying all these episodes. I was kind of shocked by how dark they are. Season four has got a lot of darkness in it. It's where the war is really turning and breaking everybody. But I was also just watching like, so I know Maul comes back. When? So I was so speed watching these episodes. And I enjoyed them. And I always remember really viscerally. But I think I was also just like, I was a little like, oh, disturbed by a totally bald-faced Kenobi
Yes.
By the, you know, it is Kenobi, but it's not his face. And I think I got a little distracted, even though I enjoyed them. And this time watching it through is just like, this is such an amazing arc because it's such a significant Obi-Wan Kenobi arc. Obi-Wan hasn't been as present in season four. And like, I kind of love that this is his arc and we're spending so much time with him. Most of the time he has a weird face, but it's so much Obi-Wan time, so much Obi-Wan perspective. And then much like a lot of Obi-Wan's life, at the end, you kind of realize a lot of it's about a Skywalker.
Yeah, that's true.
So I really love that it ultimately, like we talked about, it feels a little bit like Revenge of the Sith dry run.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of all the genre elements that the Clone Wars pulls from, this feels like it has a lot of noir stuff. It's a lot of great noir stories with literal, you know, face changes. Dark Passage comes to mind in particular. But just that general noir vibe, there's a lot of shadows. There's a lot of not ever knowing who anyone really is, either literally because they're disguised or because you don't know who you can trust. There's such that great sense of just, the galaxy's kind of awful and rough, and can you trust anyone ever? Can you trust your own face? That noir feeling to this is so great.
Totally works. Absolutely works.
Yeah. And then you mentioned this arc is notable to me because it's just like it's a tour of the era, right? From Boba Fett to C.O. Bibble. Like you just encounter all these characters, all these cameos, right? You got Cy Snoodles wandering around drunk, just like it touches. And then Cad Bane's a huge part of it. And it just there's so much going on.
You got Biff, you got, it's pulling from all parts of the story, all parts of the galaxy indeed. Yeah. And I love, especially when the C.O. Bibble one, I'm just like, they just are, it's full prequel. In an era, you know, where that was a brave decision. This whole series was a brave decision to just go, no, we're not leaving this era. We know there was some public discourse about how much it was bad. Nope. We're sitting, and this one was like, that guy, the communication disruption guy, bringing them all here.
Yeah, and I think it was around this time of viewing where I was really enjoying the Clone Wars. And it was like, this is amazing. There's amazing stuff in here that I was like, you know what? I love the damn prequels.
Perfect.
Not just the era, but the actual films. This is great. Final thought for me, big picture wise, is this is a great arc if you like hearing people say the name Moralo Evol, which sitting down to watch all four in a row, not only does Moralo Evol call himself Moralo Evol, but everybody says his whole name a lot. And it doesn't trip off the tongue, does it?
It does not. It does not. Even when I misspelled it about 10 times during my notes.
Understandably so. Well, let's dive into the morals of these episodes. Four episodes. We got four morals here. I screwed up the word saying morals because I thought I was trying to say Moralo again. Here are the morals. All warfare is based on deception. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. The strong survive, the noble overcome. Trust is the greatest of gifts, but it must be earned. Do any of those really grab you, make you think of your days coaching baseball? Where are you at?
A lot of them do. Two of them jump out more than the others. And all wars based on deception is just, it's like, okay, I can accept this as this truth, but let's, you know, Star Wars does ask us, ask why you're taking action. This episode does as well. So I was like, that's an interesting starting point with these episodes. And then I love the strong survive, the noble overcome, and this comment on true solutions and life, and not true victory, but true solutions, true problem solving is what I attached that one to. More on all that later. But the all wars based on deception. I saw it in two different ways as we talk about what's going on in these episodes in a moment here. But it's this idea of even the honorable can sacrifice parts of their character in an effort to win, which and that win might be something you need for the state of the galaxy. But you're kind of deceiving yourself maybe at times. It's a what's the cost type of thing. It's layered and complicated for sure. But Anakin at one point just straight up lies to himself about logic to accept his path of vengeance.
Yeah.
So he's at war. He's a constant war, and it's based on a deception, and the deception is something he's doing to himself. It's fascinating.
Such a great setup of I think a less discussed thing in his immediate turn to Vader in Revenge of the Sith, where, you know, Palpatine puts out like, well, you know, the Jedi, they're going to kill all the senators. And Anakin's like, I agree. And like, come on, Anakin, You are lying to yourself to justify what you're doing, you know? So I love that comparison. Yeah, I think trust is the greatest of gifts, but it must be earned. That's great because it's so central to this whole arc. The strong survive, the noble overcome. Yeah, that's you really got some great Jedi spirit, some Padme and Leia spirit of like looking at the big picture and, you know, staying alive to keep your eye on the actual big picture goal. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. I don't know if that ever helps in baseball coaching.
Kind of.
But for me, the big one is all warfare is based on deception. Because, yeah, I think that's kind of what's at stake for the Jedi with this battle of, you know, we see in this episode, this arc that Yoda is really feeling the like, oh, man, we are making a lot of choices where we're just kind of wading into the darkness. And to think that the Jedi, in my interpretation, my opinion, their philosophy is always to be as straightforward as possible, right? That's where, like, you know, Filoni tells that great story of his interview to get this job with George Lucas and Lucas telling him how a Jedi would negotiate. And Lucas saying, like, a Jedi would put their lightsaber on the table and go, here's the deal. I have power. Here's where I'll use it. Here's where I won't. Here's what I would, what I'm asking of you, you know. They want to do that Jedi process that we talk about and joke about of like, hey, you're doing something that I think is hurting somebody else and I need you to stop and I'd love to talk to you about it. And but if you attack me, I'll take an arm. And if you don't stop, like that's what, you know, they want everything to be like a noble duel between gentle people, right?
Yeah.
Just so to wade into a war that's all about like, you know, secrets and espionage and even like battle tactics. Can we sneak around and flank you from behind? Like it, everything about the nature of this is not staying in the light and showing somebody else all your cards.
Right. Yeah. Slippery slope. And they're on it and their shoes are wet. That sounds like a football. It's the third quarter. All feet are wet on the slippery slope of the game.
The Jedi feet are wet. That is a great summation of this arc. Should we move on to the big themes, the big ideas at stake in these episodes?
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Let's dive on in.
Yeah, so for you, what are some of the core ideas at stake?
There's this idea of going back to some of that moral I was gravitating to is just what do we tell ourselves on this path to victory? I use the term victory, and I'm not seeing things just in terms of wins and losses, but this is a war. You want to do things that would end the war. That might be considered victory. Anyways, going back to what you're saying about the Jedi and just even how this it starts for me where Obi-Wan separates from himself for the mission, literally, physically, is no longer there, fakes his death. Which is a great action sequence and is literally no longer himself in this thing. It's him, of course, I know, but the visual representation of it is that's not Obi-Wan and everything he's doing might be for the greater good ? But it is not him really necessarily. The actions, everything that they're taking. And then this idea of duty above all else comes out of that, which is good and bad, right? Because I think we all would go to Kenobi on Tatooine. I always love reading those summaries by Kristen Baver. She even mentioned that too as well. Like that's Kenobi. When you think of Kenobi, he's going to put duty first. And in this case, that's good, but it's also a little bad because he put duty in front of his connection to Anakin and Anakin's trust. And so that slippery slope, shoes are wet. And then all of this is to save Palpatine, by the way. We know the ending of that. They don't know that. So that's a big starting point for me. There's also some sub stuff, especially in the first episode, of confusing weakness for and caution, action versus inaction. Pretty big theme there as well, whether just Anakin has a view. He thinks a lot of what's going on is weak, man. You got to take action. And that's not necessarily a bad thought sometimes, but you know, the whole patience lesson pops up.
Right. That is a grid thread that is picked up on in this episode or in this arc of Anakin, like his conversation with Tarkin of like, the Jedi don't go far enough. We sit and we contemplate and we poke around, but we don't just go directly at the problem and cut it in two. And Palpatine's like, good instincts, follow that. Yeah. It's really great. I think for me that theme that you're bringing up of unquestioning commitment is so great because you can see the positive of it and then you can see the danger of not questioning your actions enough, which is, you know, the story of the Jedi in this era. And I think particularly the story of Kenobi in this arc, right? That it's great that Kenobi is selfless and he does what he needs to do. This is why I sometimes talk about Kenobi not as the best Jedi, but as almost like the platonic ideal of Jedi, of like the one who is the day job Jedi of like,
yeah,
this is my thing. This is what I do. And I am committed to the life of it. Because this is, I love that we get to see in the opening announcement that we don't hear the dialogue, but we see the council meeting where this is being discussed.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan realizes he needs to do this. And he looks slumped. He looks like somebody, you know, just told him that a friend died, you know?
you're so right. Often they sneak in. First time around watching the series, I didn't really pay attention to the intros more than I'm sitting down with my microwave burrito ready to watch the show, right? There's so much in them, including that kind of footage. That was a big reveal. He's crestfallen.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do this, but he knows it's his duty, right? Yeah. And that's great because he's willing to be extremely selfless. That is his job. That is his commitment to being a Jedi. He has the most serious mind, even though he's very playful. that he's willing to sacrifice all of this of himself, but then he does it at Anakin's expense, right?
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's on the right course of the larger goal. I think it's really important that he expresses. For Obi-Wan, it is about Palpatine as a symbol of the Republic, and that's what the Jedi do. They defend the Republic. But he expresses early on, well, yeah, we got to save Palpatine, but this could lead us to finding and capturing Dooku and Grievous. So his mind is, the stakes in Obi-Wan's mind are, if we could find them, capture them, we could end the war, right? So he's making these sacrifices for this big picture. Really assuming that his friend Anakin that he has trained is ready to make those same kinds of sacrifices. When I think in Obi-Wan's heart, he knows Anakin is not there yes. yet, you know?
Yeah, I think they all would know that there. And look, I understand. We all have that friend in the office. Like if there's a surprise party on Friday, you don't tell Greg because Greg's going to blow it. I get that. I get that. And I even the stuff in The Last Jedi with Poe and Holdo. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you're going to make those tough decisions to withhold some information in leadership positions. I really do believe in that. But you have to weigh all that stuff and how it goes horribly wrong and how they're all like, ooh, especially Yoda, like time for the truth to be revealed. Uh-oh, we've done something wrong.
Yeah.
It's part of the lesson here.
Yeah, I think it's a huge part of the lesson. And I love that not only do we see Obi-Wan go through this like physical transformation, go through the personal pain of knowing that he is risking hurting Anakin, knowing that knowing what he puts weeping Satine through at his funeral, you know?
Yeah.
Like this is hurting Obi-Wan, but he's just like he's smiling and joking and he's going to get it done. I love that it gets that moment where he says, no matter what reports you hear, do not contact me or send help. Like he's really like, I will sacrifice myself. I will get this done. He risks exposing himself as Kenobi in the box, you know, to try to get as many people through as possible. And, you know, he justifies it to Anakin ultimately with this. I know I did some questionable things, but I did what I had to do. I hope you can understand that, which is just sort of like a key phrase for the whole thing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love how Obi-Wan's, you know, selfless commitment in kind of unquestioning commitment then is reflected in the Jedi overall. And we know this about Mace and Yoda, but this arc is really good for Mace. Mace is the one who's usually willing to just go take action. Right. And he's unwavering of like, we've looked at it. We've talked about it. We got to do this. And there's that moment where Kenobi says to Mace, I hope this was all worth it. And Mace Windu says, we saved the Chancellor. That's the important thing.
Mm.
Mm. And that's where we're really getting into the, is it really the most important thing, or should you be questioning, you know, what you're willing to sacrifice for this? Like the Jedi are about questioning things. And then this episode is great to see that Yoda is right.
Yeah.
The three Yoda quotes I wrote down is heading down a dark path. Are we?
Yep.
And then it, great fed up Yoda, warn them both, overdo the truth is. And just straight up saying to Anakin, wrong to deceive you, it was. It's so great to see Yoda being the one who's like, yeah, I mean, all the arguments are solid that we need to do this deceptive, dangerous thing, but my heart is not in it, you know?
Mm, not right. Well, you talk about the Mace stuff. There's a great moment where Palpatine kind of threw the Jedi, quote, protecting him versus solving the issue at Mace, and how it's kind of this perversion of some of the stuff we're talking about, where, you know, the strong survive and the noble, actually overcome. It's like Palpatine's kind of throwing the reverse at the Jedi of you're not really solving anything here. We're not winning the war. Putting pressure on it from the outside, just kind of putting his Sith energy droplets into the mix.
Yeah, yeah, and reminding Mace that he's getting too rigid, right? Which Mace doesn't quite hear.
Mm-mm. No.
Yeah. I also want to talk about this just kind of big explicit idea of trust, right? How were you affected by the conversation of trust?
How withholding trust can absolutely have consequences, unintended consequences, maybe at best. This idea of, because the moral is, the trust is the greatest gift, but it must be earned. That's a pretty, got it. That's pretty straightforward. But I just saw it kind of play out a little differently with Anakin, where he now has no trust for the system, and he shouldn't. They didn't earn his trust. And it's a kind of this reversal. You hear that, you read that moral, if I was just put it on a piece of paper, you'd be like, well, of course, trust is great. You better earn my trust. It's the other way around. And Anakin's the one saying it. And just talk about dry run. There's actually, like, Rocco Hardin and Anakin are actually fighting. And I'm like, that's a dry run for Mustafar. Like, this whole episode is, the whole arc is playing out. Everything's going to almost kind of play out as is later on. And a lot of it's just this destroyed trust. And there's some powerful lines from Anakin towards the end. How many other lies has been told by the council? How do you even know what that you have the whole truth to Obi-Wan? And so now that means you can't tell him anything. You can't tell him anything. And what's going to come? The fall is so much easier. This is the victory of Palpatine. He's just chipped away at that foundation. It didn't fall, but he chipped away so much that it's ready to fall. And that comes out of this trust idea.
Yeah, this violation of Anakin's trust leads so much to seeing how broken and vulnerable he is in Revenge of the Sith, when he feels like he can't trust the council. He can't quite trust the Kenobi. And they are being hypocrites, right? They've raised him saying, look, you got to know all your emotions. We can read your emotions. You lay yourself bare and be open and honest with everyone all the time. That's what the Jedi are about, except for now.
Yeah.
You can totally see a young angry person being really feeling really horrible about this. A couple of ways that I see trust in this episode, it's not just that Kenobi keeps it from Anakin, right? Mm-hmm. It's that crafty Kenobi explicitly says that he uses his closeness to Anakin to sell the plan. That it isn't just an omission because he isn't sure if he can trust Anakin. He's using Anakin, right? Yeah. And there has to be such an assumption on Kenobi's part that Anakin is ready to be just as selfless of a Jedi as I am. Because if Anakin did this to me, I'd grouse and I'd tease him, but I'd realize I am in service of the bigger picture,
Yeah.
But that's not at all the way Anakin perceives it. He needs family. He needs closeness. And one of the people he's closest to has absolutely violated his trust and pushed on his rawest nerve of losing people, right?
Mm. Mm, yeah, you cannot deny your feelings, Anakin. They are what makes you special, says Palpy.
Yeah,
that's a real strong play on his emotions.
Yeah, and then Palpatine continues a quote by saying, "If you can stop this plot against me, I trust you."
Yeah,
so you can really see how the Jedi and Kenobi are feeling dishonest, and Palpatine is feeling more honest. Yoda, to his credit, I think, tries to be a little bit more honest with Anakin and has that great scene where he's like, yeah, Obi-Wan thought your grief would, the plot would not work if people didn't believe that you as his best friend were upset. But then Yoda says, but for my money, Anakin, we can't trust you. He's got that great line, Skywalker, a powerful Jedi you are, yet unpredictable and dangerous you can be to both your friends and enemies. So Yoda's handing him some truth. And from that Yoda perspective, Anakin does maybe need to work a little bit harder to earn the Jedi's trust, but Anakin's trust is being broken too.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, it's a circle of broken trust, I guess. But
a broken circle.
Yeah, if Anakin was just a little bit more mature, a little bit more down the path, and a little less Anakin, this might have been an okay plan. But again, I hate pranks in life because it takes the one thing we have between each other, which is trust, and then just destroys it for a laugh. I get violent if you try to prank me because it's just pointless. And it's, I'm like Anakin at the end of it. Like, well, I can't trust you at all ever going forward. So that's the big backfire here. But Anakin, he doesn't make the right choices going forward. Destiny has moved him to this point and he's like, nah, I'm still going to not trust. Not going to change myself.
Yeah. So it's a great, intriguing, dysfunctional soup.
It is.
of broken trust that Palpatine, you know, manipulates expertly. You know, that line where he says, it is possible they do not trust you to control your feelings.
Oh,
which is true. They don't. But then there's that kind of flip side to me where, ironically, as Reiko or Rocco Hardeen, Obi-Wan is trying to gain the trust of all of these, you know, this vile scum and villainy of Maral Eval, Cad Bane, even Dooku, right? Of trying to convince him that they can trust Hardeen in the sort of the bounty hunter version of trust. Some of the challenges in the box are about trust, right? That serum challenges, you know, do you trust the person who's going to turn off the actual rays, all that kind of thing. Then Cad Bane's ultimate plan is this comment on trust where he doesn't let anybody know what the big picture plan is. They only know their part. So he doesn't trust any of them, but they all kind of have to trust him that their parts add up to it. So all of these ideas of trust made me think about just the idea of what is trust. And I am actually curious to ask you in a real world way, for you, what is it? Is trust being predictable? Is it reliable? Is it like, you know, if you do X, your friend will respond with Y? Is it just knowing that you can confide in somebody and they won't betray you? You know, what is trust for you?
It's the ultimate leap of faith, right? And over time results. And, you know, if I keep, if I tell you deep, dark secrets and, you know, you don't tweet them out, I can continue to trust. But it all begins with that big, giant leap of faith. You could even approach it from a spiritual sense if you want, I guess. But yeah, that's where it all begins. That's why I think going back to even like Kenobi and the Jedi, but you know, there was a little bit of it. I'm going to take that leap of faith that this is going to be an all right thing to do with Anakin, but they didn't have the track record there. They had maybe should have known a little bit better. And we've all had those moments where trust is broken and you experience it and you hopefully learn and adapt and move on. That's how I approach it. I'm always going to extend the, we're always going to be in a trust tree until one of us is pushed out.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel it's a kind of trust when you don't necessarily agree with something a friend is going to do, but a situation comes up and you trust that they are going to respond the way you know they're going to? And it's not even a way you agree with. It's just like, but I know they're going to do that. Is that a form of trust to you?
Is it a form of trust or resignation?
A form of just understanding?
Understanding, yeah.
Yeah.
Understanding. No, knowing them, yeah.
The other kind of trust question I wanted to ask you based on this, because a lot of this is about plans. It's about being one part of a larger whole. So there's kind of this trust versus clarity thing. So if you were a part of a plan, let's say like maybe a show, and it's being put on by someone you truly trust, which would you prefer? Would you prefer the clarity of somebody going, okay, I need you to, at this point during the show, walk out on the stage with a goat. And they told you, don't worry about it. Trust me. You'll understand it when you do it. Or do you want that clarity of, let me tell you the whole big picture show. Let me give you the total understanding of why you're walking out with a goat at that moment.
I am the type that just says, all right, I'll meet you on stage with a goat. That's me, right? I just need to give me what you need me to do or say, and I will do it. And hopefully I earn your continued trust in that regard. I don't try to think of it. Your show example is great, but like for me, something like over in the movie Trivia Schmoto world, I'm not involved with it all the time. But when I show up to announce a match, I'm like, just give me the three things you need. I will do that. until I fail to do it. And then either I'm not around or I'll need more information. And then I just kind of trust that everyone else is going to do what they need to do. And then along the way, you come along, and I'm not saying specific to like something like the Schmodown YouTube show we've been on, but like along the way, someone will break that trust bond. And then I just know. And then I might know I need to pass on even more information, or I might need to ask for more clarity. But I'd be okay. I'm not saying I trust Cad Bane in life, but I'd be okay. All right, this is my part of the thing. I'm going to take care of my part.
Okay, great.
I function like that.
That is very good. Yeah, in general, I prefer to be a clarity picture. I like the big picture, but I think it's good to work on trust and just going, oh, yeah, no, I don't need to know.
But it works
the big picture. If I trust you, I'm happy to go do my part. Yeah, your Schmodown example is great. Like if they asked me to like, hey, come do a live show and call this one match, I'd be like, great. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, because I trust them and I don't need to know the rest of the big picture.
Yeah, but exactly. But I also like, I love working with clarity people like yourself. You know, it's like, cool. Because not that, I never want the burden of all clarity fall on other people, but it's like, if I feel you got the big picture, I will hit the notes that I need to. You know, I always want to be aware of it. You know, for center sense, it's a small business, but you know what I mean? Like I work well with those and I you know, and it's an extension of trust too. It's a big leap of faith for a clarity person, right? To be like,
yeah,
I'm going to give you this one bowl of spaghetti. You know when to eat it, right? I'm going to trust you to know to come on stage and eat that spaghetti. Once again, food enters into a four center conversation, but yeah, it's, and I think, I don't know. I think Anakin is revealing himself to be a little bit of an angry clarity person. Not that clarity people aren't angry. Angry.
Well, yeah, I think that's the big thing to bring it back from spaghetti and goat shows to Star Wars. Yeah. Do you think Kenobi made a mistake? Should Kenobi have tried to trust Anakin and say, this is what I'm doing. I need you to play it this way and trust that Anakin could.
Hindsight, obviously being 2020 here. Yeah, he did make a mistake you almost wish you could have spoken to Ahsoka and said, should we tell Anakin? Yeah, we're going to tell you because we think we can probably trust you better. You know, but she's the one that along the way has seen so many things of Anakin. She's given him so many sideways glances as he chokes people
including in this episode, right?
Including this episode. And maybe I'm not saying it's a mistake that they didn't ask her, but you know, I mean, like that could have been part of it, but I also feel they know Anakin from a management point of view. I feel they should know Anakin enough at this point to know that this wasn't the right move.
Yeah. I kind of think ultimately that is the lesson of this is it's Yoda is right that Anakin can be dangerous and unpredictable and he has a lot to deal with and he does still need to earn the trust of everybody around him, but that Kenobi, I think, as much as I love him partially because he's flawed. And I think for my personal value judgment, yeah, he needed to build that bond of Anakin and say, we are truly brothers. I trust you. You know, and I need your help on this. Because yeah, Ahsoka's just running around the background, giving the odd side eye. But this has got to be in her list of, you know, worst hits of the Jedi, right? When she's deciding to step away.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Trust. And there's some more unintended consequences, right? So it's easier for her trust to be broken. And she has great reason to have broken trust later on. quite frankly, it's in her face, not subtle about, thanks, but no thanks. But yeah, along the way.
Yeah. Any other big themes or ideas for you?
Yeah, a few, but I think now they reflect kind of this larger picture. But yeah, there was a lot at play in these episodes.
Yeah, I think the only other kind of big one for me is just this the idea of death. Like there's violence in Star Wars always and in the Clone Wars in particular. But this one just there are so many images that were just about death. Right. We got to see Obi-Wan's funeral. We saw, you know, the morgue and crematorium system in the prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like this real kind of basics of dealing with, you know, bodies. The whole idea of killing a Jedi is this currency that's almost like comic that like, well, if you kill him one-on-one close up, that's worth like 10 respect points. A sniper.
Yeah.
That's worth like 5 respect points, but it's still about like the death of a Jedi is like currency that these people can spend. Right. You got to really question, we're watching these episodes. Some of the people that die, would they have died regardless when Cad Bane and Morallo Evol broke out, or are some of people dying is a byproduct of this, you know, mission where saving the Chancellor is more important than anything, you know?
Good question.
And then the box itself is just this great survive or die escape room, which, you know, is very reminiscent now of Squid Game.
Right. Yeah.
And then for me, I think it was really interesting that a lot of the episodes were just like, we are surrounded by death, literal images of it and functions of it. And that made the Festival of Light such a contrast, right? It's literally called the Festival of Light, right. Celebration of unity and peace and explosions of fireworks of light. It really drove it home for me.
Yeah, wonderful, intricate histories in those fireworks. Great stuff.
Yeah, beautiful. So what are the sort of big picture ideas in these episodes that reflect larger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars for you?
For me, there's this idea of we talked a little bit about the action versus inaction, how that relates to the Jedi, how that relates to all of us, Anakin's view of it. He views his rage as some sort of justice, vengeance, the pursuit of it. And it all leads to kind of this idea of, you know, we almost got the word for word quotes from Yoda to Luke on Dagobah. And now it's Yoda to Anakin. And that all falls into that the why of helping and the why of your action and asking. What are you trying to accomplish? Are you just trying to survive? Are you just trying to actually overcome? And that, by the way, that's, we talk a lot with like Last Jedi, there's lessons of, hey, sometimes the victory is survival. And that I don't want to confuse the two. I think what Holdo and everyone's going through in Last Jedi is more the noble overcome and looking for true solutions versus just throwing, you know, troops against the wall to see if they survive this particular round. But it all falls into this, the why of helping. And Star Wars wants you to take some sort of action. So it's appropriate that you ask why and ask yourself that before you start.
I think that's great because, yeah, there's those Anakin is wrestling with that difference between, you know, justice and vengeance. And you know, a light Jedi uses a lightsaber and they cut people down. But there it matters so much. The why is it absolutely unavoidable defense, you know, therefore being justice, you could argue. Or is it like he explicitly says to who he believes to be Rako Hardeen, like, I want to kill you.
Yeah.
But the man you killed would want you to go to prison. And by the time he catches up with him on Nal Hutta, that's out the window. And he's just going to kill him and lie to himself that it's justice, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think one of the big picture things for me is this comes up a lot in discussions of Anakin's, but this arc was really explicit that this this arc could be called Anakin's two dads to me, you know, because we see how much that, you know, despite his missteps, in my opinions, Obi-Wan is, you know, this good mentor, right? That line where he says, if it was up to me, I'd kill you right here. But lucky for you, the man you murdered would rather see you rot in jail. Like, Obi-Wan is a good influence on Anakin, who does love him and does want the best for him. And they are close, you know, and then Palpatine is just encouraging him to, you know, follow his feelings. Nobody trusts you. Of course, your instinct to slash and burn is great. Go for it. And just the utter tragedy that in this tale of two dads, in this episode, it really does appear that Obi-Wan is the one who is letting him down and Palpatine is the one who's supporting him when, you know, that horrible irony that it really is the other way around.
Yeah, there's this idea, this the power of truth, which, you know, we talk about trusting the power of truth and then versus the selling of perceived truth and how you can just manipulate things. And Palpatine is so damn good at that. And just to see him work his magic on Anakin all through this. And then, you know, flip side, Yoda just kind of saying nuts to this. We've got to reveal the truth. This is all wrong. It's all wrong. Yeah, dangerous stuff. Palpatine knows the game, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yeah. And this section, I often talk about justice for the Jedi, where like they make mistakes, but they're striving so hard to stay on the path. And maybe this episode, it'll be justice for Yoda.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because Yoda is the one who's like, yeah. But I think season four has a general darkness to it, I think. But it's really getting into the missteps of the Jedi for me, and particularly, you know, symbolized by Mace, where they're dabbling in lies and deception and darkness and really getting into a little bit of the ends justify the means philosophy that, you know, Palpatine must live because he is the symbol of the Republic, assumably, just without question, period. Yeah. And not chasing down the whole truth and the pain of Anakin being the one who who shouts that when you know that's on Yoda's mind, but he's not doing enough.
Yeah, there's this idea to kind of wrap up my thoughts on it of just the Jedi saved the day, right? Oh, I shudder to think where we'd be without the Jedi. They saved the day, but they're still being duped by Sheev. They're they were duped by Dooku, the whole distraction plan, Dooku watching them. It's just this their strengths and weaknesses are on display simultaneously here. They are the heroes. There's a couple comments of, it's what we do. We're heroes. You know, it's our job description. It's our speciality, as Kenobi loves to say. But the overall picture is they're just so lost and not picking up on what's actually happening. And Yoda's getting that sense. Mace is probably starting to get that sense because by Revenge of the Sith, he's got some pretty direct lines about it, but they're still kind of on a losing end here, sadly.
Yes, sadly, Mace does not yet sense a plot to destroy the Jedi, but maybe he should. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to discuss some of the fun details in this great arc of the Clone Wars. Back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the season 4 Clone Wars arc we're calling Deception of Kenobi. We always like to talk about the fun moments, the thrilling action moments. Ken, what were some favorite action moments for you in this really kind of thrill packed, I would say,
episodes? There was a lot, and I start with this one because sometimes when I'm just writing down my favorite action moments, I can go big and go deep. Other times, those little moments of, yeah, that's pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool that Obi-Wan takes a deep breath, knows he's going to step on out and take that hit. And he does, and it's a pretty wonderful. And it's just, you know, it's a little bit of crazy braveness, but I'll give Obi-Wan credit for it.
That was my first action moment as well, just the deep breath and just like, all right, shoot me. It's so chill, and it's so just like, what? This is my job. Like, I'd rather be having, you know, a drink with Dexter, but this is my job.
Yeah, and I imagine after all this, he does. But yeah, and talk about trust and all those big things about Kenobi and duty over all else. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Deep breath. Let me stand in front of this blaster.
Yep, and go flying off the roof, and hopefully that'll work out. Yeah. Next one for me after that is it's partially what the actual combat is, but mostly it's just the reality of what it is. Of Obi-Wan fights Boba Fett and Bossk in prison. If you told me that sentence in the 80s, the early 90s, I would have lost my mind, and I couldn't have imagined what it would have looked like.
Right. And you probably would have been wrong with what you guessed, but
I would not have guessed that Obi-Wan's face had been turned into a bounty hunter and Boba Fett was a child under Bossk's care. I would not have guessed those things, but man, it's just it's pretty amazing. And I do just like the way Obi-Wan fights. It happens a couple times in this arc where he is really fighting defensively and just trying to put somebody in a lock, right?
Yeah.
So they just can't move anymore.
Yeah, I put that too. If Boba Fett creates the diversion, I know he was working for Cad Bane, like, taking a little job here to create the diversion. But it's just such, and we're about to spend a lot of time with Boba Fett, of just someone who's just like kind of both really unafraid, but also not afraid to throw his violence in front of you.
Yeah, no, it's so great. Yeah, I wonder if I doubt Boba Fett will reflect on this moment. Like, remember when I was in prison?
No, that's episode 3 of Book of Boba Fett. Let me go back to that fight.
Rico Hardin put me in that arm lock. Ugh, still mad about that. What are some more action moments for you?
In prison, we got a great HBO show that breaks out there. What I call Obi-Wan Hardin. And by the way, I've spent all my Star Wars fandom saying Rico Hardin. In this episode, everyone says it differently. Rocco, Rico, Ruko, whatever. Hardin. Obi-Wan Hardin stabbing what I'm calling the shark to criminal, like a transformer. I know it's our guy Riff there, his species, but stabbing him with that knife while he's eating. I mean, come on, that's some hard prison yard bleep.
Yeah, no, yeah, he I think it's a fork. I think he space forks him.
Space forks. Oh, that was great.
I love it.
Because Obi-Wan says at one point when he's talking to everyone back at the base, where he's just like, you know, this is, I'm having a little bit of fun being a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem like he is using humor to cope, right? I'm like, that's kind of fun. I wouldn't normally do that. Yeah, stabbing the Carcharodon. There we go.
Shark to criminal might be easier for me to remember going forward, but you know.
It's easier to say. Mm-hmm. Jumping forward to the next episode, that spaceship crap, or crap, I said crap, the spaceship crash, that spaceship crap, the spaceship crash on Nel Hutta is, that's great. Just with all the steamy vines and the atmosphere. And it's just like a pretty, as spaceship crashes go, there's a lot of exploding parts.
It's funny. I noted that too. And then the crash later on when Ahsoka's flying the version of Lady Luck, Lando's EU ship, that same kind of design there. That was a good crash too. So good crashing. Good job,
Andy. Yeah. Very, very exciting. Then for me, I go to the big fight here, but with Anakin. Anakin's fight with Cad Bane is great, but the fight with Obi-Wan is Rico Rocco Hardin, man. Just that moment where the blade just comes up and he's just going to kill him is super powerful. But I think the coolest thing for me is just that that Obi-Wan knows Anakin so well. You're so right to say that this is kind of a preview of Mustafar, that Anakin is dangerous, right? I mean, he's powerful and he's pissed, but Obi-Wan can just see through his moves and pin him and choke him relatively easily because he knows him that well.
Yeah, yeah. Almost like Obi-Wan doesn't know it, but he's taking a bit of a dry run too of how we can get through this. Because I think the Mustafar fight shows that too. He's often on defensive, often on the verge of losing. But at the same time, I've always seen Obi-Wan in control of the Mustafar fight a little bit. This is kind of that too. So if we're about to get the fight of the century rematch on the Kenobi series, this is kind of the scrimmage before it all.
Yeah, that's a great psychology of it, of like who I used to know him so well, who is he now?
Yeah,
totally. For the rematch. What are some other action moments for you?
In the second episode, when there's two things with Cad Bane, and I'm a Cad Bane fan overall. I love him kind of using his toothpick as a weapon. We got Obi-Wan Hardeen using a fork, but he's using his toothpick as a weapon with Pablo, which it has to be named after the Pablo from Star Wars, Lucasfilm, Hidalgo.
Yeah.
Love threatening with a toothpick. And then when they're trying to get out of there, the Hutt fighters pursuing them, underrated Kenner mini rig kind of design around those Hutt fighters. I really like that sequence.
Yeah, no, there's some great canon stuff to just see how the Hutts handle their planet. There is absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Going forward to me in the box, there's a bunch of stuff that's cool in the box, but the combination of my favorite bounty hunter, or one of my favorite bounty hunters, Embo, and then super floppy fungus person, yeah. Darrowin. But both Embo and Darrowin just doing these like cool, amazing, weird flips. That's just some great Star Wars animated action.
Yeah, I wrote down Embo just flipping everywhere.
Just flipping Embo. Like, yeah, I know. I want to see the Star Wars Olympics to see Embo just take home the gold.
Yeah.
What else for you? I got a couple more.
In that box. The box is, you mentioned Squid Game. I know the mid-90s movie Cube and many other kind of weird horror horror thriller, you're all locked in here and get out type of things, and or just go into an escape room here in Burbank. Obi-Wan versus the mini probe droids. I really like, he's got a lot of cool moves, Obi-Wan Hardeen, and our boy Morala Weevil puts those probes on him. I like that sequence.
Yeah, that was really great. I really like towards the end of it when Obi-Wan just starts doing you could call that Jedi action, but that's just parkour. You know, he starts just parkouring off the box walls, and that great moment where, like, you know that Obi-Wan needs to sell that he's this violent, ruthless bounty hunter. But you always also feel like he's a little bit indulging himself when he is just punching the hell out of Morallo at the end there.
It's I was looking at it thinking, again, he's really kind of enjoying this, but that's just me editorializing there. I think he's taking out some anger.
I think it's, you know, he's not perfect. It's you always struggle to stay on the light side, and he was, I think he was losing the light a little bit there as he was pounding him, but that's he doesn't fair. Kill him, so
it's fair.
Yeah. Moving on for me, we always like to note it because it is apparently the most popular thing to happen in the Clone Wars. Anakin gets shocked again, twice. This arc, it's tentacles and Sith lightning. Like almost every other arc, it is some sort of organic creature or stick, and then also specifically Dooku. Dooku has electrocuted Anakin like 72 times.
I'm so glad we are in a chess match. We know each other's moves here. I trust you're going to hit this one too. Yeah, Anakin, I said, Anakin, stay with me here. Gets electrocuted twice at least, all the way through it. It's just life. It is the Force. It is destiny trying to get his attention, and it's just not working.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a really funny just master cut when Vader is watching Luke be hit by Sith lightning. If you just piece together every single time in any storytelling, Anakin had been hit by any kind of electricity.
Just with that swelling Star Wars music and just all these.
Oh, that would be great. Final one for me is that fight between Anakin and Dooku. That's really up there for me of just like you got all the normal lightsaber flare, but the amount that they're throwing at each other, that sort of that gothic environment and a little bit of that kind of nice palace. But it's, you know, what's happening is so dark and so violent. And the two moments that I really love is this is the fork arc, the throwing the forks with the Force and ending up in his mechanical arm. In building toward that moment where Anakin almost has him, right? Where he's got his hand on Dooku's throat and he's choking, you know, he's going to end him, and Palpatine's smiling.
Oh, that's a great smile. Yeah. I love that you highlight that because I think there may have, not now, but there may have been a time, I wasn't actively thinking this, but just like, you know, they fight in Attack the Clones and Sith. And I don't know that I don't need to see them fight anywhere else. And they fight so many times versus the Clone Wars, and each time I think just kind of makes what I do end up seeing in Sith work even more for me, you know, where Sith is just the end of this journey. I love all the fights they have. I love the rivalry, and I love that it's there.
Yeah, and in particular, like, this fight is so great because it is Anakin releasing his anger, right? Mm-hmm. And he wants, he's not trying to arrest him. He's not trying to survive. He wants him dead. He's trying to kill him, and yeah. He's close.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. Any other action moments for you?
Two more, kind of combined entry. You mentioned a little bit of Erva, Dooku force throwing plates and knives and spoons and sports, whatever he can find. I was laughing at that. Also, in the I think it's the first episode when the officers there are being attacked, and this is when Rekka Hardeen won't pull the trigger on one and tells Cad Bane his blaster is out. And that whole sequence. One of them kind of fights for his life with toast, or space toast. This is the weapon. So I almost want to put this in comedy, but if someone dies here, so it's not hilarious. I like that kind of action. I won't go into too many details. I may have used coffee as kind of a defensive weapon in a fight on a fourth level stairwell once in my life. And I get that. And I've been there. I just didn't have the force on my side. So I was
You're Jason Bourne.
Yeah, you know, you gotta use what you got, I guess. Yeah, but because he's eating the food, it looks like smokehouse garlic cheese toast, and he's eating whatever it is. It could be shock slices, I don't know. But like then next, you know, he's like throwing it, and it's all, and I was like laughing, and then later on, Dooku throws the plates and everything. I was like, yeah, we got a theme here.
This is a fight with your food episode. I love it, love it. Mm. Anything else? Is that it?
No, that's it for action.
Well, man, then let's move on to comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. I'm going to edit myself on the fly because I wrote down way too many things. kudos to the screenwriter, Brent Friedman, because I kind of thought overall that this episode really had a lot of sharp and specific dialogue, and that really added to the comedy, along with the directors, I think, putting in, you know, a lot of great touches along the way. But in particular, I thought the script itself was really sharp. What are some comedy moments for you?
I do like... Obi-Wan saying, so how was my funeral? It is kind of a fun little thing.
That is, that's phenomenal.
But all that kind of leads to Yoda going, not a game, this is Obi-Wan. And I just loved, like, angry Yoda. Like, stop joking around, you sassy. Come on.
Yeah, I love Yoda when he's like, we can joke when I feel like it. But then, like, hey, come on, let's get serious.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah. I feel bad putting this in whimsy and weirdness, but honestly, that pained look on Obi-Wan's face in the opening announcement, like we talked about, in his slumped posture. I tried to take a screen grab of just that slumped posture, because, like, how many people feel like that in a meeting, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, every time.
Oh, man. That one cracked me up. There's the drunk lady in the bar early on who says, wow, I want to check his midichlorian count.
Okay, so I wrote that down, and I was like, I'm not going to list it. And see, I'm going to see if Joseph does, because I watched that the first time and didn't hear it. Then I had headphones on the second time, and it's like, it's in all your ears. You hear it like it's said in your room. It's such a funny line. I totally missed it the first time around. So you heard it too. Great. I didn't imagine it.
Nope. I probably didn't hear it on my television, but I do when I watch it with the old earbuds in. A lot of great background stuff, but that one was there. There's so many great Obi-Wan lines that I made a choice to not write down too many, but when he is, going through this process, he's just had his head shaved. He's about to be painfully surgically altered. And Yoda is talking to him about, like, well, the Chancellor doesn't just want to skip the festival light. That would be a sign of weakness. Obi-Wan says, sign of weakness. Wouldn't want that.
Yeah, well, right, and that's deep. That's big. That's a big theme one, right? This thing of going on the weakness and how it's just silly to have that thought. I love that moment. That's great.
Yeah, and it's also just that great reminder that, like, interpersonally, Obi-Wan's not a big fan of Sheev. Right. Obi-Wan does not vote Sheev, right?
Nope.
So this is really about, like, the I don't respect the man, I respect the office. Yeah. So, okay, I'll go through this hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
duty.
Great.
Duty above duty. All else, Obi-Wan.
For me, the line from Cad Bane when they land on Nal Hutta, Pablo's pawn shop has everything a bounty hunter needs and more. that had to be written. Yeah. Like Cad Bane is just the cutting a commercial for like an old local station, right? Like this is your family owned mattress store level commercial slogan.
It is. I love it. And no actual proof anywhere that I could find that it is Pablo Hidalgo. It just reads like that to me.
How could it not be? I mean, it's
the guy down the hall. He's got all the things you need if you need some Star Wars things.
Yeah. So what are some more for you?
Well, in that sequence, when you know, Cad Bane's trying to find his get a hat. I love that he just says, I don't like to stand out. Says the bounty hunter that literally has always stood out anytime he's on screen. And they kind of call it out with the hat when he gets his hat back and everything. But like, it just, because he says it with such sincerity, I don't like to stand out. You literally do every time.
You have a incredibly recognizable silhouette. Yeah, the hat through line is great of Bane needing a new one, that one being a priority. You know, Kenobi kind of mocking him for it. And then later, when Ahsoka recognizes him from far away, he's like, oh, yeah, that's Cad Bane. You see the hat.
Yeah, Ahsoka says, yeah, who else wears a hat like that? Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. And then there's that through line where he brutally kills that Ithorian that is one of a pair of brothers. And then he has the line, what, it's a nice hat. Yeah. It's a funny, brutal through line. But I also got to ask you, do you feel like at the time this was a Dave Filoni meta joke? Because at the time he liked his hat. He hasn't been wearing it lately. Everyone evolves and changes. But at the time, he certainly wore that hat all the time. Did you feel like this was meta?
I did not stop to think of it in that. But I'm going to side with your theory here on that. I do think it was him trying to defend the hat. And by the way, we should do an entire episode on where is Dave Filoni's cowboy hat. I think he's doing some maturing. I think someone pulled him aside and said, you want to be taken seriously as a live action director, don't dress like a cartoon character. Not that hats are bad, by the way. I own a cowboy hat. I don't wear it much because I'm not in wrestling anymore. But I think it's fascinating. And yes, I think a little bit of Cad Bane is reflecting the man in the hat.
Yeah. Hat through line, absolute winner. Not intended as a comedy line, but it made me laugh. It's when Palpatine is encouraging Anakin to follow his feelings, and Anakin says, "You won't regret this," and Palpatine says, "No, I won't."
Well, there's a lot of unintentional Palpatine comedy.
Yeah, it's pretty great. What are some more moments for you?
I liked a little beat. It's not super funny, but Morello evolves saying when Racco Hardeen and Cad Bane, and they're all trying to leave, and Cad Bane's like, "You ain't coming." And I love that Morello just goes, this is between you two, like work it out. Like it's not going to go bad for all of you. I love that one. Ahsoka, I took offense to this. Ahsoka says, if you want to find a low life, you start at the saloon. Hold on.
That is really the attitude. Star Wars loves its bars. And in general, we need to just see like a really happy, healthy bar sometimes, saloon where people are just good people are enjoying themselves and kicking back.
Yeah. You know, Ahsoka, you talk to Obi-Wan later on. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess. Yeah. Maybe Ahsoka influenced Obi-Wan to have that strong of a bad opinion about Chalmers. Who knows? Who knows? I like Dooku's ongoing relationship with Kenobi. When he's watching the box tournament, he's asking about Rako Hardeen, and like, yeah, that guy killed a Jedi, killed Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Dooku says, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And you can't tell if he's impressed or bummed that somebody else killed him or doesn't believe it. He's just kind of like, he seems mildly obsessed with Kenobi. Like he really does believe that Obi-Wan's got something, because there's that great line toward the end as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sassy pajama Dooku showing up there.
Sassy pajama Dooku. What are a few more for you?
There's a great Cad Bane line of, does anyone know what this gas bag is saying? Now, kids, I don't recommend you say stuff like that out in public, but Cad Bane, it's a reason he's kind of popular. I wouldn't call him an anti-hero. He's just a villain, but I like a lot of that. So there's this little subplot of the Bith brothers selling ships with just enough fuel to get to the other brothers' gas station. And so when Anakin uncovers that, the Bith laughs in the most charming way, just like, I know, isn't it great? We're pulling this over everyone here. I just thought it was great.
Yeah, and that's just like a really fun detail that really, like, serves a plot function that'll to allow, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka to catch up, but it's just so much flavor, right?
Well, especially because, you know, you get big old tough, mean Cad Bane is like, you know, complaining about it, and Morales just like, why? Who would sell a ship with only enough fuel to get to this place? And there's another bit there. It's like, come on.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. I like in the box when Obi-Wan's really trying to keep his cover, but trying to kind of work together and keep everybody alive. And, you know, he reveals that he knew that Parwans could handle the poison. Yeah. And Cad's getting suspicious, like, how do you know that? And he tries to be cool and goes, I used to kill Parwans for a living. And then Daron goes, gah!
It's a great, very funny.
Very, very funny. For me, getting toward the end, I really wanted to just clip out that Mace Windu just is a sound and use it places when he says to Obi-Wan as Reiko, everyone's a little tired of looking at that ugly face of yours. That's the closest that Mace gets to whimsy. Yeah. It doesn't sound at all whimsical.
No, no. It's like, are you joking or are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. What are more for you?
There's great exchange between Ahsoka and Padme when Anakin's talking and Ahsoka says he means saving the day, and Padme says, of course he does. These are the two people who maybe outside of Obi-Wan know Anakin the most, and I just kind of like that exchange.
That was really sweet when so much of this is Anakin being in a dangerous rage that these two see the best in him.
Do. And then the final one, it's whimsy comedy, but it's also a question back to you. You are the Embo expert around here. So when they slip on into the digital disguises, where does Embo's hat go?
I think it goes into a maybe some sort of like a pocket dimension. You know, the way hyperspace is kind of another dimension. Does it go into a hat dimension?
Yeah. Yeah. I know we always say here at Force Center that Star Wars wants you to ask why, not how. So why does his hat disappear? Thematically, I want to know, but also how.
I don't know. I think that holograph has to like work on some like emotional level. Like it's
yeah.
We'll dive into the holograph because it is a lot. It's a lot to accept when that big old hat goes bye bye.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Final ones for me. You mentioned it. I love Obi-Wan getting overly cocky and saying, you know, we specialize in heroics, Chancellor. Fair enough. Obi-Wan went through a lot and he thinks he saved the day, but getting a little cocky. And I'd like Dooku's line, I referenced it earlier, when he says at the end, well done, Kenobi, you are a worthy adversary. Yeah. I cannot say the same about your young apprentice. Yeah. It's just like, I've won, but I'm going to get a dig in.
Yeah, no.
As I fly away.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on then, unless you have any more.
No. But very funny run of serious episodes.
Yeah, so much going on. We're going to get into canon lore connections. There is kind of a lot in this episode, so we'll try to move through. I wanted to talk just about the funeral in that first episode of seeing a Jedi funeral at kind of at the temple at the height of the order. There's no pyre. It's this clearly it's a ceremony, but then the lowered into the floor and then that yellow light springs up and Satine is there. That shot of Ahsoka in Plo Koon really reminded me of it was framed and lit very similar to Mace and Yoda at Qui-Gon's funeral.
Right.
There's kind of a lot going on there, and I wanted to get what your thoughts or reactions were.
I mean, it is sad, and also I do want the deleted scene of Satine just slapping Obi-Wan across the face about 2 weeks from now, and she's like, what? And I came, but yeah, no, it actually is effective, and it made me think of just like how normal, not normal, but you know, this is probably the routine of this here on Coruscant. And maybe think of even High Republic. Can we see something like that in High Republic?
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that they, you know, it is just day-to-day life, right? People, Jedi fall, that's sad, but they also pass away and, you know, do they have different rituals for it? Or is this a special one? Is, I mean, he's a master. Is this for masters, you know?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So a lot going on there. It's great to see Satine and just the emotional punch of that. Let's get into technology. The facial transformation technology, the vocal emulator, which, you know, you swallow a bug, and then the shadow hologram disguises. these are all really big technology swings, leaning toward the sci-fi. I think if they showed up in a film, there would be many very strong opinions about these, about them being world breaking, right? You know, like if the Holdo maneuver is world breaking, the idea that this technology exists and rebels spend most of their time just dressing up as stormtroopers. So how do you wrestle with all that? How do you feel about all that?
I mean, to go back to like to just dive into the Holdo maneuver of it all and everything back then, and we did a Force Center, but whether on air or off, I would always say like happily praise Dave Filoni and happily say you want him more involved, but don't think that he and his folks on the Clone Wars didn't get away with a lot of things that they couldn't have live action. That's something I used to say all the time to the point of annoyance, I'm sure, at others. And this is an example of it. You're right. You swallow a voice spider, like, maybe you get away with that, but the other stuff, it would raise a lot of questions. And that's why I think back in the day, I think I got held up on it a little bit, not the point where I didn't enjoy these episodes, but I just was like, I don't know about that. Especially even Obi-Wan's face changing thing. I'm like, I don't know how that works. Nor do I want to know. It looks painful.
It's like you 3D print your own face.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That might be easier. But now I'm a little, I'm totally not even worried about it now, because it's Clone Wars does this. It is a big sweep into a different little genre. And it's almost a post-apocalyptic space, weird stuff going on. I can't even comprehend, and I'm okay with it. The stuff at the end with the digital costumes, whatever you want to say, it still doesn't work for me as much, but again, not enough that I'm questioning anything in the episode. It just, little too much how pops up for me, I guess.
I think for me, just having all of it in this arc is that reminder that I think, my opinion, you know, Lucas is still very much involved. This is the Lucas spirit. This is Star Wars has a spirit of why not throw it in there? Does it lean toward the sci-fi? Are there other moments where it makes you go, well, why didn't somebody else use that technology? Don't care. That it feels like there is a spirit in Star Wars where the idea and the spirit of it, in the sense of fun, in the sense of invention, trumps being super, super logical, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, I always hold that close and try not to get too upset about, like, but if this person had this technology, why didn't this person? So I first approach it that way. And then, you know, there is that part of Star Wars where a million guides get written. I ran out of time to look all these up on Wikipedia, so I don't even know what's all out there on these technologies. I will freely admit. But if you want to dig in and, you know, explain it, for me, it makes sense that these are maybe really expensive technologies, experimental, not available to everyone. You have to remember that you're dealing with, Jedi, with probably the highest level of technology and resources. And you're dealing with, bounty hunters who are being bankrolled by the Count, who controls half the galaxy and is in bed with all of the technology and finance companies.
Right.
That for me, there is a logic that kind of flows to this, is like, Han Solo could dream of finding or buying one of these things, you know?
Right.
Maybe, but they're not just lying around the galaxy. You know, I think it's just like a real world. Just because the technology exists doesn't mean everybody has access to it, right? You know?
Yeah, I still...
Just because humans can go to the moon doesn't mean I can hop in my rocket and take a trip, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have an Apple Watch yet. there's a lot to it. One of my kind of headcanon answers is... and again, I know there's a little bit of they needed it, not as a plot device, but they needed it maybe for clarity for the audience of everyone's disguise. And it's kind of a twisty, flippity flop plot at the end, right? Where this one's Palpatine, this one's not a Palpatine. So this is a fun way to kind of keep us up to speed. So I have no problem with that in that regard. But in terms of my headcanon, I think maybe these, like you said, experimental, maybe somewhere along the way, someone's like, I could be crazy, but that person's costume, just their outfit just disappeared. And I saw that it's Embo. Like, and maybe along the way, someone's like, it's not a reliable method of disguise. That's my headcanon.
Yeah. I think I was going to try to be like real technical on the headcanon on the hat to answer your question.
Okay.
Maybe there's like a green screen element where it is not only projecting the image of the security guard, it is projecting the background that you'd expect to see behind their head.
Yeah, it could work.
But then I also just I choose to believe that this is glitchy technology, and those glitches aren't just to show us, you know, who's really there. That it's like they don't work right.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. They only work with a lot of confusion to cover you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on. I like that Obi-Wan's code name in the joint is Ben. Did you like that, or did that feel too on the nose for you?
No. I like it. You know, again, this is an era where you probably weren't expecting to get this kind of answer, and so I didn't have a negative opinion at all to that. It just kind of went like, oh, that's cool that they got that. And doing a little research on it, I think they were going to try to use that with Satine earlier on, and it just didn't work. Anna Gray's actually in the session said it's just not hitting emotionally, so they scrapped that and comes back up here. And I thought it was good use of it.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I also like Mace knocking out Reiko with a Jedi mind trick because it tracks for me that one could do that, and it's got a little Kylo flair there.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So a just kind of detail that it was a plot detail that intrigued me is that once Hardeen and Morallo Evol and Cad Bane escape, the Republic puts bounties on them.
Right? Yes.
How did you feel about that? Like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, sure. You know, you kind of think of like, you know, bail bonds people or, you know, whatever. Like, oh, yeah, of course. But then you're like, wait, is the Republic like paying Dengar?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would think it more, you know, in line with the, like you said, the people jumping bail and Dog the Bounty Hunter suddenly has a place in Star Wars. But the way bounty hunters are treated, viewed, and often celebrated as they are in Star Wars, they are the villains of the galaxy. It's a complicated profession, we've heard. I saw this a little oddly, you know, like some state sponsored violence. You know, it was a little weird moment in a good way. It was different.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you can get into guild stuff and all that, and maybe there's some people who are like, you know, Cad Bane is not approved. Right. You know, we reject his request for payments. There's also this fun feeling of like, yeah, maybe this is one of the ways that the Republic is kind of slipping.
Yeah, that too.
There's that great shot on the saloon on El Hutt of drunk Sai Snoodles.
Yeah.
Leaving saying, where are we going next? I love you guys. Did you like seeing drunk Sai Snoodles?
Yeah, I did. Those episodes we already covered weren't my favorite watching the show years ago. They're still low on my list, but I do love Sai. And little party Sai is pretty fun.
Oh, party Sai was very fun. You mentioned this line, but I want to be sure to touch on it in our canon section. When Yoda is talking to Anakin, giving him the truth about Obi-Wan, and says, you know, if you leave, help him, you could, but his future uncertain it is. This, of course, has just like huge amount of rhythms, Star Wars poetry to what Yoda tells Luke about going after Han and Leia. How did you feel about that?
I love the use of it here. I love what it means, you know, for Luke's path and his lesson. And it's also a reminder of, like his father before him, he was potentially on a similar path, and depending on the choices he makes, and he makes the right choices and learns some of these lessons, sometimes the hard way. So even though this is all after the fact, when you lay it all down on the storyline there, I think it's really effective and interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's really, really effective too, because then for me, I think of Yoda, like, knowing he's using almost the same words that he used with his father when he's talking to Luke, of just like, this is what I was afraid of, Obi-Wan, you know, that right. He has this attachment the same way his father did that can lead to these reckless choices.
No, I like it. It's not lazy Yoda. It's like truth Yoda. Like, I know what I'm saying. Luke, trust me, I know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it, I think he has the same like core argument too of like the future is always in motion, and we have to be sure that we are acting out of really verified, legitimate concern, and we can't be allowing ourselves to just become afraid of what could happen and react to the fear of what might be.
Mm. Yeah, it's big,
which is explicit in what he says to both Luke and Anakin. So I thought that was great. Just a couple more things here. The Festival of Light. It's another Star Wars holiday. That's great. 847 years ago, Naboo joined the Republic. At one point, we hear kind of in the background Palpatine say, it wasn't long ago. This was all plasma mines. I love the Festival of Light. That's one of the things that I remembered because I think I just like this idea of yeah, there's got to be, with all these different worlds, millions of holidays. How did you feel about the Festival of Light?
I loved it and had fun kind of going through some of the trivia of it that they have on StarWars.com of the story of Naboo, the ship that crashed, and some groups going to the hills. Like, there was a lot of fun stuff in there, and I love that every planet would have this. Maybe think of the Aki Aki Festival of the Ancestors, another good party in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to do that deep dive. I really enjoyed it. And, it, you know, it's contrast to the darkness.
Yeah.
We talked about our CO Bibble sighting. Love that poor Obi-Wan is back on Theed. I'm sure he's got some memories there. Mm-hmm. Last thing I wrote down, we don't have to go through it all, but I just wanted to ask you about it because it's such a kind of different beat for Star Wars. In the box episode, Count Dooku does this bounty hunter roll call like it is the beginning of a sporting tournament, right? How did you feel about that? Did you like that, or was it like too anything for you?
No, I actually really did like it, especially the second time around. I was kind of laughing at it, and it's helpful to see the characters. And then one of them, again, I always go through the trivia galleries. I'm not like this wealth of Star Wars knowledge. The Weak Way is specifically designed to pay homage to Keira Knightley and her character in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's somehow kind of random. So Kira Swan is the name of the bounty hunter in the episode, and the thing he says that he wins something. It's the obsidian. It's essentially the Black Pearl, which is the ship.
The Obsidian Sphere.
There you go.
Two-time winner of the Obsidian Sphere.
So I love that. It's so bonkers. And it's so, anyways, that whole sequence I ended up kind of loving because it was wonderfully cheesy to me.
Yeah. I mean, we want to keep the episode within our normal length, but I wrote the whole thing down because I was like, I wanted to talk about every one.
Yeah.
Because they're so funny. They sound like press releases, and it's so great. The two that I do want to point out is Twazi, your acrobatics once earned you praise from Chancellor Valorum.
Yes.
She's like, everybody else he's calling the exterminator, you're second to no one, you never bring anyone back alive. And like, yeah. The Chancellor applauded for you once is a weird one. And then the Snivian Sinrich, inventor of the holographic disguise matrix. And I thought that was interesting, possibly setting up what we see in the next episode.
Oh, totally.
All right. Any other canon things for you as we head toward the end?
No, it was a great list, and there's a lot there.
Yeah. So was there anything in this episode or this arc that you disliked or questioned?
Look, really, other than the tech, and I'm not harping at it, it was a hold up back then. It's not a hold up now, but it's there. And but I think now I'm at a point where just like, now I do love the fun of where the hell's Embo's hat versus, you know, at one point going, that didn't work. And so it pops up again while watching these episodes. I'm so past that. These are four great episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that I wrote down is it amused me, and it was one of those lines of like, I don't know if this is supposed to amuse me, but it did. So much of these episodes are so sharply written, and then there's one point where Cad Bane says, "Over my dead corpse." What? A little redundant in your threatening tone, Cad Bane.
Yeah.
A small nitpick. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, absolutely not. Other than I want more praise for those Hutt fighters.
Oh, those Hutt fighters are great. Only thing that I want to shout out is Stephen Stanton, who of course does many, many great voices. He does Moralo Evol, and that voice is great. It is so creepy and insidious and different. I just think that voice in particular, he's done a million amazing ones, but that one's a real triumph for me.
Yeah. So many celebrated voices in his catalog of indeed, but no, it's a great voice and a great character. The design, the hunch, the kind of the whole look of it. It's a little like Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
For Spider-Man, but yeah.
Yeah. And you can understand how people would focus on like, yeah, Tarkin, Raddus, you know, Obi-Wan in Rebels, all the great things that Stephen Stanton has done, but that particular voice just matches that character perfectly. And I love it. So we always like to end with a fun question about toys. Ken, if you could have a figure or really any merch based on this arc, who or what do you want?
There's two things I need. I do need a Cad Bane with an Indiana Jones hat because at one point, of course, he picks up Indy's hat. So give me that. And then I would like the Floby haircut droid that shaves Obi-Wan's face and head. I want that one.
That would really save everyone a lot of time. Yeah. There are two things I want. I really like collecting Obi-Wan Kenobi figures. The weirder, the better. I desperately need a 3¾ Obi-Wan Kenobi 3-pack. That is a normal Obi-Wan with chest wound, then entirely bald Obi-Wan, and then Obi-Wan is a Rako Hardeen.
That is a good, that's a powerful 3-pack.
Yeah, yeah, maybe someday. Yeah. Cross my fingers for a HasLab. Daron, I love just how floppy and weird that character is. And the more I watched him spin and flop and just flail around, I thought, I want a little toy of him that you can like stick in your car window and it can just jiggle around while you drive.
Oh, yeah, just put it on the dashboard there. Just,
yeah.
Oh, let's do that.
Flop around, Bounty Hunter, flop around. Darwin, known only as the Exterminator. All right, next up is Season 4, Episode 19, Massacre. Season 4, Episode 20, Bounty. Get into some dark and thrilling Asajj Ventress content. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
If you should find your podcast in some sort of box, say trouble with transitioning podcast hosting sites, work to get a true solution, not just survive until the next day.
The noble shall overcome any technical difficulties. That is a great moral. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Yes, we are the Force Center podcast feed. We can be followed on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. A podcast available. A lot of different spots. All the regular spots. If we're on a spot, we're not on a spot. Just let us know. We'll try to get there. And of course, you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. And you can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, KenNapsok.com. Joseph.
Excellent. You can follow me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for all of my other comedy adventures, you can check out my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for entirely hairless on his head, Obi-Wan Kenobi, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.